No.
What's your least favorite scary movie?
No one's gonna touch that fucking ray of sunshine. Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about our least favorite aspects and most debatable opinions of our most favorite scary movies.
We fight over our favorites.
My name's Jesse.
My name's Travis.
And today we are back to our Friday the 13th series.
Yeah.
Except now we're with New Line Cinema.
Yeah.
So they have the rights to Jason Voorhees. But not to the name Friday the 13th.
Yeah, so it's going to be really weird considering all of our Friday the 13th movies are titled Friday the 13th and then followed by the part it is and then the actual title.
Yep.
This one's just going to be Jason Goes to Hell, which is what the movie is titled.
Yeah, so. Actually it's titled Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday.
That's true. So we have...
Which we've heard that lie before.
Which is very weird to me because they just acquired... the movies and like this is the final one. Like, why would you do that? But obviously that's not what they did. They made more, but maybe they were just trying to like, we're done with the Friday part. Jason is now an every day of the week type of dude now.
Yeah, so, he's no longer working for the weekend.
Yeah, he can be in any holiday. He's not just Friday the 13th. He's flexible. Yeah, now
maybe he's a Labor Day killer now.
Yeah, he could be anything.
Yeah,
so
yeah, this movie came out in 1983. We watched it on our Scream Factory Deluxe Blu-ray box set. And this one actually came with, we had a disc for the theatrical cut or the unrated cut. If y'all know us, then you know that we went with the unrated cut, obviously. And it was so worth it. We did not have time to watch both versions of it.
This is one that, there have been several. There were three discs from the whole box set that had to be replaced. This is one of the ones that had to be replaced.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Okay. The reason why, because it's only the unrated disc, I believe, and it's because one of the shots where extended gore is shown, which this movie has a lot of that because it's unrated, it was fucked up, so it didn't actually display the gore properly. So we have that, and yeah, so we got the actual good shit this time. Yeah. Got the correct disc, except it's got faulty subtitles more than the previous entries. Okay, for whatever reason.
I would not even say... Okay, so in the previous entries that we've talked about with our Scream Factory, and we love Scream Factory, just throwing that out there, we just think that there's issues with other Scream Factory closed captionings. We don't know who's in charge in that department, but they are... I feel like they've been working from home, and they've been like... distracted while they've been doing their job, and like, we get it, work-life balance, it's a tricky thing. It's just been very distracting as people that are into watching movies with captions, and so much so that Friday night we watched an Italian movie, Torso, and because it was all in Italian, we had to have subtitles on to have... I mean, it was a giallo, so it's hard to know.
It's the only way that the movie goes, though. Yeah, like, it's forced.
But at least having English subtitles helps us have some idea of what the storyline was meant to be. And it was distracting to have the subtitles not match what was being said, because I'm so used to that. But anyway, this movie, the captions were only on half the time. Yeah, and for a minute I thought it was, like, an issue with aspect ratio, because it seemed like... we would get like half a sentence and then it was like, okay, it seems like maybe the line is underneath. But then we were getting like single line things like dog barking, and that would show up. And there was no way to adjust the aspect ratio.
Yeah.
Via our TV settings or the DVD settings.
So this could be an unrated disc issue. The theatrical could be perfectly fine. We don't really know. So we didn't test that, because obviously we want to watch the gore.
But we did still have, a typo with Luke your doors.
yeah just check our social media. We'll have all the shit posted.
We'll post the video.
Yeah. Do you the favor of not having to watch that.
Yeah. But this movie was directed by Adam Marcus. He was a believer in, as the saying goes, equal rights means equal sights. He thought that part 8 in particular was fairly sexist with all the focus on female nudity, and he wanted to make sure that there was plenty of male nudity. And boy howdy, he did deliver.
Sure did.
We didn't see any peen, but we also didn't see any V. So we saw a lot of...
equal nipples.
Yeah, we saw equal nipples. We saw a lot of the
pelvic dip.
So there was quite a bit of that. This movie was also written, we recorded this back-to-back with our Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 episode. This was also one that had multiple writers to it. Some were credited with the story and some were credited with the screenplay, so I'm going to try and get it straight. J. Hughie Lee was credited with both the screenplay and the story. Adam Marcus, the director, was credited with the story, and Dean Laurie was credited with the screenplay.
Okay.
The music slaps. It fucking slaps in this movie, and I feel like this is a franchise with fairly strong music without, but some movies are obviously stronger than others. This one is very strong, and you know why?
Why?
Our boy, Harry Manfredini, is back in the saddle again.
It's very noticeable.
Yeah.
It's like, got that Friday feel to it.
It started up and the music was playing and I was like, this feels like OG Harry Manfredini soundtrack. And we knew that they had some of his music, like they had rights to it in the library or whatever, and composers were using it for other movies. Mm-hmm. No, this was noticeably, it was Harry Man.
Yep.
All the way.
Straight up.
And this movie, honestly, it was kind of like... like a reunion, like the boys were back in town, because Barry Moss was also back as one of the casting directors. He was convinced to come back. He was part of Part One's. And the FX was not Tom Savini, but it was a pupil of Tom Savini, i.e. Greg Nicotero.
Did this guy work on any of the previous Friday films?
I did not look that up. Okay. I just immediately recognized the name. I feel like if he had worked on any of the previous movies, we would have talked about it though, because he's a big name in special effects.
That's fair. Yeah.
So, it's a great reunion of sorts. It's produced. Sean Cunningham is credited as one of the producers. He's automatic. Getting his money all the time.
He's just for rights.
Yeah, and I feel like we have to talk about this because this movie, like I said before, it switched from Paramount to New Line with this one. And if you know. The franchise is still undergoing a hefty legal battle, figuring out who has the rights to what, and us as audience members and cast and crew that have worked on previous films and would love to work on future films have all been screwed over in the process because they cannot sort this shit out.
It's between Steve Miner and Sean Cunningham. Sean Cunningham. But mentioning that, it's interesting because we didn't watch the full interview in the special features for this, but there was an interview with the director, and basically what he was told whenever he was given the reins for this movie. So basically what he was told by Sean Cunningham, so basically the rights have been sold to New Line, and you're going to be lucky if you get the hockey mask as a result, which really... kind of makes you see why they went with the direction that they did with this movie. They ultimately do get the hockey mask, but it makes sense. The guy apparently was under the impression that Friday the 13th movies were still killing it at the box office because he was a big fan himself. Little did he know that Friday the 13th had been tanking in revenue apparently ever since. This movie, in fact, came out like 4 years after the last one. Jason Takes Manhattan came out in 1989, and this one was 1993, which is the first Friday the 13th movie that had been made since you and I were alive.
I know! I was gonna say that. Yeah. It's also the only one made in the 90s.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Freddy vs. Jason is like early 2000s.
Jason X.
Oh yeah, when was Jason X?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, Jason X was 2001.
Okay, yeah, so there you go.
We have the internet at our fingertips. It's really easy to figure this stuff out on the fly.
Whatever.
So you're talking about box office hits. So this did have a decent ROI. I'd say probably in line with a lot of the other Friday movies. It was made with a budget of about $3 million and got a box office gross of about $15.9 million. So a little over five times its budget. So not terrible. Especially for a Friday movie. I feel like that's fairly typical from what we've seen.
Horror movies are pretty much like, they're so low budget or so low budget that, you know, if you make any little bit, it's a pretty decent amount.
Yeah. So this movie was starring Baby Boy Kane Hodder as Jason Voorhees. He also played a security officer at the morgue.
Not credited, but it's definitely him.
And I looked it up online and it is, in fact, him.
Okay, cool.
Which he's been known to, like, hop out of whatever effects makeup he's been in to play another character in movies before anyway. So he plays his own father in Hatchet. It's fine.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
I love it. Let's see. Carrie Keegan plays Jessica Kimball. There was some behind-the-scenes drama with her because she refused to do nude, and there are two different stories. So she said when she was casted that she...
Cast.
She said when she was cast that she was not going to do a nude scene, and then, of course, you saw near the end she had, like, a shower scene. And her story was that she always said that she would never do nude, and she heard from other crew members that he knew that and said that he would be able to convince her otherwise. Adam Marcus says that she never disclosed that. And apparently what ended up happening, and this is all from IMDb, so I have no clue how accurate any of this is. So IMDb is probably less reliable than Wikipedia as far as stuff like this.
It's kind of the same. It's user input.
Yeah. Well, Wikipedia is, like, heavily monitored. I don't know how monitored IMDb is, especially for this page. You know?
Yeah.
Supposedly what happened is for that shower scene, she put on some, like, nude bikini bottoms that she had, like, what they described as, like, a Madonna, like, cover up. Like, basically it was, like, styrofoam cups or whatever.
Yeah.
And part of the reason she was crying during that scene is because the water was so hot. It was, like, burning her. So it was kind of, like, a retributive moment for her not wanting to go fully nude. And she got so upset working with Adam Marcus that Sean Cunningham had to come in and finish. Because they were, like, 3 days from wrap. He had to come in and finish because that was the only way she was going to agree to finish the movie.
So he, like, kind of assisted, directed some of this?
Yeah.
I'm sure if we got into the special features of this thing, we probably would have gotten more information.
Yeah, but we've also watched the Camp Crystal Lake Memories documentary, and I don't think either of us remembers that about this.
I guess. I don't know.
So, I don't know. And this is just us, like, this is just us with a scheduling issue, not having time to do as much behind-the-scenes research as we would like.
I promise we're going to fix that in the future. Yeah. Because I really want to get more behind the scenes and special features.
Yeah, once we get through October, we're going to be able to do more of that stuff. So, but we want to get more into behind the scenes stuff, and we try to get as much as we can, but sometimes we just, there's only so many hours in the day and we work full time. So that's what I know about that. Another fun thing is that Tony Todd auditioned for the role of Creighton Duke.
Dude, that would have been perfect.
Yeah. But it ended up going to Stephen Williams, which I feel like he did a really good job.
Yeah, he did a great job with it, yeah.
Let's see. The rest of the cast includes Stephen Culp, who played Robert, and John D. LeMay, who played Stephen. So those are the main names that I chose to, like, pull out from there.
Yeah.
And then I've got one more piece of, like, fun information that I wanted to share.
Okay.
So there was a stunt that went wrong, which resulted in some burns on Kane Hodder, and I'm assuming it's from the very first stunt. And so he had some burn scars, like, on his neck and part of his, like, shoulders and torso and stuff. And they were healing, and there was one day that he was on set and he was taking off some of his makeup, and of course, like, some of, like, there was, like, some peeling happening too. And there was a kid on set who was, like, I don't know if it's part of a program or what it was, but, like, he was there to see how movies get made. And he became very, very frightened seeing the skin issues that were happening as a result of the injury on Kane Hodder. And Kane was very comforting to him. And he was like, it's fine. I just look a little bit different, but I'm still a person. It's okay. It's not that big a deal. And, like, the kid calmed down. And then he was very excited to be on set. And he showed him around. And apparently, according to Adam Marcus, like, he found out that, like, Kane Hodder also, like, volunteers at children hospitals and stuff too. And he's like, you know, you see Kane Hodder and he's oftentimes in these, like, very scary villainous roles. But in real life, he's just, like, the nicest guy. And he's the biggest sweetheart.
You want to know what else?
What?
In the scene where he's out of his mask and he plays the security guard, he's rocking a killer mullet, baby. That's right. Kane Hodder, one of Jessie's whore icons.
How dare you ruin this for me?
One of her whore icons had a mullet, and that's the biggest endorsement that I can get for a mullet.
How dare you? How dare you?
I'm just saying.
How dare you?
For those who do not know, Jessie is so against the mullets, and I'm so for them because years ago, like a couple years ago in like the mid to late mid 2010s. I call it the comeback of the mullet, and by God, the mullet came back. So I'm just rubbing it in anytime I see a mullet. And even if it's in the 80s or the early 90s when it was still, you know, well, it is still appropriate to have a mullet. But
I mean, that was the height of like Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah. So just saying, that's what, you know, what that's about. So anyway.
How dare you ruin that sweet story about baby boy Kane Hodder?
To me, that's how like a you? Bow tie of love.
How dare
like
you?
I sent that thing off. It's like, I love you, Kane. Thank you for the mullet. On my end.
Okay. Well, this movie starts. Oh, no. We need to talk about our ratings. My bad. I just wanted to get off the mullet talk. Okay. Okay. So, Travis, before we discuss, what is your rating of this movie?
All right. So, I know that this movie is not one of the most loved in the franchise by fans of Friday the 13th. And I understand that people do not like this movie, but like I said before, this is one of my favorite Friday the 13th movies. So I give it a 8.
8.
Yeah, I'm going to give it an 8. I think it's fun. Like, it doesn't necessarily feel like a Friday the 13th, but also it does. And that's because, you know, obviously there's the switching of people, like, you know, bodies of Jason. He's possessing different people. That's fine. I get it. There's reasons for it. It kind of makes it feel kind of fresh, though. And I don't know. I feel like it was like a good breath of fresh air for the franchise that I needed after like being dormant for 4 years. And it kicked it off pretty strong.
All right. So for me, this is... It feels almost like it could be the first time I've watched this movie. Like, I know I've seen it before just because I've seen every Friday before. You yeah. know what I mean? But, like, it's not one of those that I go back to time and time again. So, for me, this is essentially a new viewing experience. You know, when it's been so long since you've seen something. And I wasn't sure how I was going to react to it. And I fucking loved it. I'm going to give it a 9.
Oh, shit,
like,
dude.
And I told you when we were watching it, and I was like, I feel like this is going to be one of those. It's going to be, like, really high up in the franchise for me. Because, and this was, like, maybe 10 or 15 minutes in. I was like, I fucking love this movie. And it's like you said, it feels like a Friday movie, but it also feels different from a Friday movie. And I'm going to go ahead and say, we watched The Final Destination, a.k.a. Final Destination 4, a.k.a. the 3D one. We watched it last night, and I am a staunch defender of that entry in the franchise because the 3D effects, they're awful. I'm not going to defend those. But the writing, the storytelling is amazing. And last night I even told Travis, like, all of those movies rank very, very closely for us. I think if we had to rank them 1 to 5, we'd have a very hard time. But that's probably close to the top for me because I feel like it has the spirit of a Final Destination movie. It follows some of the regular beats, but it also incorporates some new things to it. And as we were watching this today, I was like, this feels kind of similar to that, where it's got some of the beats of a typical Friday the 13th movie, but it incorporates new ideas. It makes it interesting and it has fun with it. And I love it. And I have such a good time with it. And I'm very excited to talk about it.
I'm really happy that you liked it. Because I remember, like, I was hyping it up. Because I was like, listen, I know. Like, it's not loved by most people. But it's so fun.
Yeah, no. I obviously don't give a shit what audiences tend to say about movies. Because I hate the first one. I love Takes Manhattan. I'm all over the radar and I'm okay with it. I like what I like. I am who I am. And we say all the time, part of the reason this podcast exists is because you can have two horror fans who love the genre and have vastly different ideas of what constitutes a good horror movie. That's the crux of this podcast.
Except for today.
But that's okay because this started on a premise of me saying that this franchise starts off on a very weak note.
Yeah, our franchise episodes are a little bit different. So we might have episodes where we both agree on liking a movie, and, you know, we'll have some obviously where we don't necessarily see eye to eye. This is one where we both enjoyed it.
Sometimes we'll argue with the internet. We've done that before.
Well, and
it's fine.
This one right here, yeah, I think it's more with franchises, it's mostly like we have different opinions of the overall franchise, and we're just going on a movie-to-movie basis.
I'm much more of a fan of the later half of the Friday franchise than Travis is, and he's much more a fan of the earlier half. And it doesn't mean that, like, there aren't strong points for each of us in each, like, because I'm a big fan of Part 4, and obviously Travis is a big fan of Part 9, and that's fine. But, you know, overall, like, we... When we're done covering this, we're going to have an episode where we rank all of them. And I feel like it's going to be very interesting to see how our rankings differ. So
yeah, that'll be fun to do.
Yeah. But that's where we're at with it. So we've got an overall starting rank of 8.5.
Awesome. That feels perfect.
Yes. Suck our dicks, internet. It's fine.
Please. All right, let's go.
All right, so it starts off. We see a woman in a baseball cap. She's driving on a lonely, dark country road.
Fucking Mets fan.
Travis is mad about baseball, but she's on a mission. We see a sign, Crystal Lake, 4 miles.
Yep, and they've fully embraced Crystal Lake again. After all these years of trying to change it back, I feel like they're just like, who are we doing this for? Are we doing it for us? Or are we doing it for the people? And they realize they're doing it for themselves. So they're like, fuck it, let's just name it Crystal Lake again. Yes. It's obviously not stopping Jason.
Yes. She gets to a cabin, immediately blows a fuse. So she goes to a shed to fix it. And then after, she's in a shed because it is dirty and cobwebby and they're in the forest. She must shower, as a horror movie heroine does. She turns on the water, and I was really expecting the water to be way grosser than it is because it looks like nobody has been in this cabin in like several decades.
It's a nice cabin.
The bathtub is gross. The bathtub needs my drill with my brush attachment to it. I deep cleaned the house yesterday because I've had a very anxious week and cleaning centers me. So our bathtub is fucking spotless. So she starts to get in the shower. The lights go out. The electricity in this cabin is not very well done. It needs to be updated. She gets out. She wraps a towel around herself. This is the world's strongest towel tuck. I suspect, because we come to find out, she is a federal agent. I think it is a Velcro towel, such as you use in a college dorm. And if not, then she has several safety pins holding the towel in for herself.
It's movie magic. It's pretty much all it is. It's basically a way for her to lure Jason out of the woodworks because essentially, like she said, it's an agent. I don't know what division that they're in.
Yeah.
But the whole point is to lure Jason out. And she does. He comes in and then she like bolts out of the cabin into like an open field.
Yeah. She lets him throw her around a bit first. So that way.
I don't think she lets him. I think she just happens.
She gets thrown off a fucking balcony.
I don't think she allowed that. Like, you know, if you allow somebody like Jason to like put your hands on you, you're kind of like. You don't know what's going to happen. It's not like it's predictable. Like sometimes he fucks with you. Sometimes he kills you right away and smashes your head.
She landed in such a way that she was not injured to the point that she couldn't run through the woods.
Adrenaline.
So, I mean, she was fine after the fact, too.
Adrenaline. We only see her, like, after Amelie.
Okay, so she runs through the woods. The towel is still on. And not only is the towel still on, but it is not, like, flapping over, like, over top of her vagina or anything. I do the towel tuck on a daily basis, and it's not that effective. It's not that good. I have several decades of practicing the towel tuck. It does not work like this. This is beyond movie magic. And I feel like if you are on the set of a movie and you are having to use so much wardrobe tape or safety pins or Velcro or whatever, you should stop and ask yourself, is this the most realistic wardrobe choice?
I mean, she was just naked saying. A minute ago. I don't think she's got a problem with nudity.
Yeah, we saw everything. But yeah, so she runs out into a clearing. All of a sudden, these big stadium lights come on. All of these SWAT team guys and all of this battle gear and bulletproof vests and blah, blah, blah. They come out. They start shooting. They throw bombs. There's explosions. Pieces of Jason are flying this way. Pieces of Jason are flying that way. Here's his head. Here's his heart. How did his heart pop out of his chest completely intact but away from the rest of him? Nobody knows. Movie magic. It's the same magic that made Agent Marcus's towel stay on.
Oh, so now you're an advocate for movie magic.
No, I'm just saying. This is what's happening. I'm telling a story. I'm giving a narrative. I'm trying to give the people what they want. Also, if you didn't catch it, her name is Agent Marcus. that's clearly a nod to the director. So
I did not.
Nobody ever specifically said that, but I feel like it has to be. You know what I mean?
This is day one when he's trying to come up with the names. He's like, Agent Marcus.
Marcus! Yeah. So this whole thing was like a sting operation. For a minute, I thought that they were doing like a Scream thing where they were like making a movie of the attacks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so you didn't know what was happening here.
Yeah, that's why I was like, oh, that's why this seems so forced and fake. And I mean, it still stands because it was forced and fake, yeah. But I just thought it was like,
I think it's really cool. Like, you know, after so many years, like, you know, that this guy roams this territory, they, you know, set up a sting operation where you're going to blast him to fucking bits. And, you know, like, I'm not going to say it was successful because it doesn't stop him, but it was successful in a sense that they actually like completely demolished this man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah. Then we see they're at a federal morgue in Youngstown, Ohio.
I'm sorry. We should also, like, note how much more, like, of a fucking freak Jason looks like now. Like, he's so much more, I don't know, like, mutated.
He seems, like, very waterlogged. Like, his skin is very, like, puffy, but also decomposed at the same time. He's got longer hair.
Yeah, his
hair. What hair he has.
Yeah, it is longer. I don't know what the sewage did to him or how he was able to make it back, you know.
It's not great, whatever it is. It was not his best skincare routine he's ever incorporated over the decades.
You know, I personally think that they just went with their own continuity with this here. Like, I think they ignored previous things because I didn't really pay much attention myself, but did you notice, did they have, like, the cut in the mask?
I didn't pay attention to his mask until the very end when the dog was digging it up from the dirt.
I don't think the cut's there. I think that they're going,
the only, like, cut I saw was, like, at the chin.
Yeah, it's, I think, New Line, we're like, this is our interpretation of Jason. Like, you know, we have our own version here, and we're not going to acknowledge that. He was in New York. That Jason died in New York. This is our Jason.
This is Ohio Jason.
No, he's still in New Jersey. They fly him into Ohio.
Yeah, but I just said that we're in Youngstown, Ohio, so.
Oh, well, now we are.
Yeah.
Well, that was...
Keep up with the continuity of our discussion, Travis.
In the continuity of what we were just talking about. In the
continent.
In the continuity of the conversation we were just talking about, that was back in Jersey, so.
Okay, cool. Who... The people who care about Jersey is less than the number of people who care about Ohio. And who cares about Ohio?
You did, like, 2 seconds ago.
I cared that we were in Ohio.
Well, I cared that we were in Jersey.
Anyway. So, there's, like, an autopsy going on. And we get, like, some of this coroner, like, recording the tape and, like, prepping the autopsy at the same time that we have the credits going on. Which I feel like is a different take on the credits than we typically see. Because normally they're, like, black screen, red letters, boom, here's all the people. And they actually, like, kind of tried to make it, like, interact with the action a little bit.
It just goes on too long, in my opinion.
Well, it's fine because that's how we found out, like, that's how we got it confirmed that it was Harry Manfredini, because we were like, this sounds like a Harry Man score, and then we saw his name pop up and we're like, yeah! So we hear that Jason Voorhees has been heavily burned over most of his body. We see an organ on a scale, and I assume it's his brain because it's all squiggly and lumpy, but apparently it's his heart. So whatever got into his skin also got into his heart. It's not a great, like, it's gross. It's a gross looking heart. It's filled with some sort of black viscous fluid, according to the coroner. The heart starts beating, and the fucking music for this is the best music in the whole movie. The music throughout the whole movie is great, but this is the highlight. And then the coroner, what does he do when he sees this heart beating before him and he hears this magical Harry Manfredini score? Oh, well, of course, he eats it!
Which I pointed out to Jesse, because I don't know if we've talked about it on this podcast before, but there is a trope that Jesse has noticed where morticians are always hungry and they're always eating.
Coroners are always eating, and it's always meant to be this, like, trope of, like, I'm so desensitized to death that I eat during my job. And it, like, Travis doesn't believe me, so every time it happens, I, like, point it out to him.
I believe you.
You did not believe me the first time. You're like, I've never seen that before. And then I started pointing it out, and you're like, okay, that's true.
I agreed the last time you brought it up. I was like, yeah, you know what? You're right.
Because that was not the first time I brought it up.
Well, you just said Travis never believes me.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm sorry that I'm exaggerating on our playfully argumentative podcast, you douche.
I'm just saying. I'm the one that brought it up this time. I'm like, oh, shit, he's eating a heart. That dude is super hungry.
And I thought that was great. And then I also thought it was really great that immediately afterwards, a Northern Coroner pops up and he's got, like, a huge pizza and, like, several drinks for him in the first coroner.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that trope would have been apparent either way. So he's trying to go in, and there's these security officers that are outside of the door. They're very protective about the corpse of Jason Voorhees.
Because one of them is Jason Voorhees.
And one of them is Jason Voorhees. In a way. One of them is baby boy Kane Hodder. Like, we're looking at him, and Travis goes, is that Kane Hodder? And I'm like, well, sure looks like him. And he's not credited on IMDb, but if you Google it, like, it's, and even without Googling it, like, it very clearly is Kane Hodder. But yeah, we confirmed it online. But they're being assholes to him because what is a Friday the 13th movie without some sort of an asshole police officer or security officer? He's like, I was just here 20 minutes ago. You guys know me. And they're like, show me your ID. And they're like laughing about it. Like,
yeah. Just, bunch, like, of jerks.
Yeah. Like, they're slinging their dicks around and feel like the biggest men on campus. And it's just shitty. Also, I gotta point out, he is wearing Converse, and we just watched and talked about Nightmare on Elm Street 4, and I feel like almost every single character was wearing Converse in that movie too, and I'm just like, does somebody in New Line have a deal with Converse? And I know it's a popular shoe brand, but it feels like it happens too many times that we see their shoes for it to be a coincidence.
Yeah, maybe.
So, I don't know. Speculate all you want. That's what the internet is for. Anyway, the new guy comes in. His coroner friend has been possessed by eating the heart of an evil killer, as will happen. I don't know if that's scientifically validated, but hey, again, it's the internet. Speculate wildly. Who cares about science? Not at least half of the country. It's fine. So he gets killed. He gets stabbed at the probe, and then his face gets, like, smashed into this, like, it's like a picnic table almost, where there's, like, the holes throughout it, and his, like, face oozes holes.
Yeah, this is definitely shot, I'm sure, was cut from, we watched the unrated cut, obviously, like we said before, but it's kind of interesting watching a Friday the 13th movie after we've watched, you know, all these recent entries that were neutered by the MPAA. It's, you know, it's just kind of nice being able to see the gore intended.
Yes.
And, like, in these older things, like, you get in a lot of these Blu-rays here, with, and especially in this box set, you get to see, like, what they had originally filmed.
Yeah.
But it's always in, like, these old, like, recordings of, like, VHSs, yeah, where not, it's just, like, screen recorded.
Yeah, they're not edited and enhanced and all of,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so this right here, you get, like, actual, like, this is straight up what it was supposed to look like. And it's really nice to see this movie be able to be as gory as it wanted to be.
Yes. I loved it. Fully recommend this version if you can get it. 100%. Then we cut to this special. It's an American Case File. They're talking about the killer, Jason Voorhees. He has approximately 83 kills that they're aware of, potentially more. There is a bounty hunter, Creighton Duke, who has dedicated his life to tracking and acquiring, I don't know if that's the right word, Jason Voorhees, bringing him.
I think his whole bounty is killing him. I don't think, yeah, they're going to arrest a zombie.
He has got a black cowboy hat that has made me want a black cowboy hat like nothing has ever made me want anything before.
It's so weird, too. I don't get
it. It's amazing the way he pulls it off.
Yeah, he pulls it off great.
Are you saying I can't pull it off?
I don't know. I've never seen you with a black cowboy hat before. I mean, that's the thing, though. You know, all you see people pull off these things, and then you try and wear it, and then, I don't know.
God, Travis.
I'm not talking about you, exactly. I'm talking about people in general. Like, people, it's, see these
almost
people.
Almost as hurtful as when you put your hat on me earlier because I looked like Carrot Top.
You admitted that you looked like Carrot Top.
You didn't argue with me.
I didn't. I laughed at you.
Anyway, he's there. He wants to catch Jason. And here, and after we finish Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, our next franchise that we're going to cover over the course of another year, because it's another fucking long franchise, is Halloween. And my biggest hot take from Halloween is that Dr. Samuel Loomis sucks. And when we saw Crichton Duke on screen, I was like, you know what? If Sam Loomis had been a bounty hunter in Halloween, I would have so many fewer problems with him. Because the way this guy is just going on about, like, oh, well, Jason can, he doesn't have to be in the form of a man. He can jump from this person to that person. He's evil. He'll kill you with a look. All of this, like, rambling makes sense from a bounty hunter. It doesn't make sense from a psychiatrist. And I, like, and that's the reason I like Crichton Duke more than I like Sam Loomis.
That sounds like bullshit to me, though. Like, so you're okay with, like, this random dude who's, like, you know, a bounty hunter, and he's going after this person that is killing... Hold on. Let me talk. So this guy here is talking about, you know, he's a bounty hunter, and his whole occupation is basically he goes and he captures these people. Mm-hmm. This guy... So you're okay with the person that he does that for a living and he captures these people. He's like, yeah, this guy right here, he's not a living thing. He transfers his body to other people. And the only way to kill him or to stop him is to kill him. But you have to do it. Like, so he's like having to involve like innocent people. So speaking purely from like a real world perspective, you're like, yeah, like I'm totally cool with this random dude being like, yeah, so we have to stop this guy that's doing a lot of bad things, but I have to make you kill him, and you know, this isn't anything that I can do, so you know, come on, let's go kill this guy.
I feel like it's more believable and acceptable from an unregulated profession like bounty hunter than it is from a psychiatrist.
Yeah, but you're really...
A psychiatrist has to go through so many years of schooling, so many tests, so many license and certification processes, continuing education units. There is so much... Like, they have to follow certain oaths. They have a code of ethics. All of that.
Maybe we
should... I don't feel like bounty hunters have that.
All right, maybe we should save this for a Halloween discussion.
Okay. I'm just saying. Like, his energy is more believable from a bounty hunter than it is from a psychiatrist.
Whatever.
So... Anyway, the host of American Case File, Robert something something. I didn't write down his last name. I do not like this character. I know enough about him to know his name is Robert.
That's pretty much all there is to him.
He's a douche. But he like basically is making a joke out of Crichton Duke. He just wants the views from talking about Jason Voorhees. And he's like, oh, well, I'll give him this bounty if he can bring proof of Jason Voorhees' existence. And basically is like, you know, like any, like, unsolved mysteries. If you have any information about this case, contact blah, 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 blah. So trying to get people to contact Crichton Duke. At the diner, we see that it's Joey B's diner. And I'm just going to say Joey B. I love her so much. In an alternate timeline, I might grow up to be her. It's fine. She is hosting a Jason's Dead 2-for-1 special, and all of the hamburger patties are in hockey mask shape, and I love it so much.
Yeah.
It's so tacky and tasteless, but hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, people at the diner aren't really a fan of it, because it's like, we're kind of celebrating... somebody dying here, which is kind of fucked up if you think about it.
Yeah, like, and I'm definitely coming at this from the, if it was like a real person, I'd be like, that's fucked up. But like seeing it like as a movie, like if I walked into a diner and we're like, we have a Jason's Dead special, I'd
yeah,
like, fuck yeah.
I personally thought it was hilarious myself. I'm just, you know,
definitely coming at it from an audience perspective.
Yeah.
But I loved it. So there's this waitress, Diana. She goes over to take somebody's order, but oh man, It's Crichton Duke. He wants Diana to help him. And we don't know exactly what their previous history is, but Diana is clearly perturbed by it. The other servers come over to help protect her. There's a cop in the diner as well. His name is Josh. That'll come up later. Trust us. he takes Duke into custody, and Duke says, just know that Jason's out there. You better lock your doors.
According to the subtitles.
According to the subtitles. What he actually says is lock your doors. Diana will not take this advice. So we see that there is a guy. He picks up some hitchhikers. They are going to go fuck in the woods and not worry about Jason. That is almost exactly their words.
That's because I paraphrase he, a little bit. Steven, so the guy that picks them up is Steven, and he's basically listening off to him. And it's like, so what are you guys going to go do? You guys are going to go, you know, have sex and not care about the world and get slashed? And then they're all just kind of like stunned. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
They're like, yeah, we're going to have sex, but I'm not going to worry about getting slashed.
Yeah.
Which, that just... And I know that this movie was made before Uber and Lyft were a thing, but, like, that definitely feels like when you're... Shout out to the Lyft drivers that know they're not good conversationalists, so they don't force it. Yeah. There are some Lyft drivers that are very great conversationalists, and I don't care to talk to them, and I'm not normally somebody, like, I don't... It's not that, like, it's not one of those, like, I'm in a Lyft, I'm not going to talk to the driver. It's more like... This is a thing I need to do. I'm very much a task-oriented person, so being in a Lyft is a task to me, so I'm not necessarily thinking conversation first and foremost. But there are some drivers that'll talk, and I'm like, this is a cool conversation. I'm great with it. It's fine. And then you've got some that are like, yeah, 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 I know life out here is really rough. I just bought this Land Rover. And we're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Our worries are different.
Yeah, that guy was weird.
But like he's definitely one of those Lyft drivers that like he picks you up and is like, so y'all headed to an orgy? And it's like, can we not do
this? That's not the reaction he gets. The girl in the passenger seat is like, do you want to come skinny dip with us? Do you want to fuck? And
the girl in the passenger seat is the third wheel to their outdoor fuck fest, though.
I'm just saying. It works.
Which I feel like is a little bit rude. If you're having a two-person fuck fest and you invite a third person along, like, make them part of the fuck fest.
She knew what she was signing up for.
Maybe she thought she was signing up for a three-person fuck fest. And then they were like, you sleep outside. We're taking the tent.
Maybe.
Because that's exactly what happens. They go to Camp Crystal Lake. It's the abandoned Camp Crystal Lake. And they're there. And they set up a single two-person tent. And they've got one sleeping bag outside. And the one girl has to sleep in that sleeping bag while the other two get naked in front of her.
I think the plan is for them all to... She gets naked in front of them, too. I mean, they just got back from skinny dipping.
Because she wants to be part of their outdoor fuck fest.
Well, they were all skinny dipping anyways, but the whole plan was for them all to sleep in the tent together because the girl asked her, like, hey, do you mind if we, like, get in the tent for, like, 20 minutes? And then that's up. So she's like, fine. But she falls asleep there in the, you know, the sleeping bag outside by the fire.
It's the last time she falls asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the coroner comes out and he starts slashing.
Yeah.
I think he's got like a scalpel or something because it's like those are clean slashes. I'm honestly really impressed with that.
Yeah. He gets the job done.
Yeah. So the guy in the tent is complaining about wearing a condom. Ew, gross. People out there, if your partner does not want to use protection and you guys have not previously talked about it, you need to set these boundaries beforehand. You need to know what you're comfortable with, what you're not comfortable with. Clearly, the girl wanted him to wear a condom. She brings it up like 3 or 4 times and he acts like he's okay with it until the moment that he's actually about to put it on. He goes, I hate these.
She throws it away.
She does, but I feel like it's a situation like where she's like socially pressured that she like has to go along with it. Just saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's not cool to, like, press your shit onto somebody else in the moment like that. Make them cross a boundary that they're not comfortable with. It's not cool. We are, as we established in a previous Friday the 13th episode, we are 95% sex positive on this podcast.
Yeah.
And that includes respecting your partner's boundaries. Anyway. They die. What happens is that, like, they're fucking, their silhouette from the outside perspective that we get with the, like, possessed coroner walking towards it looks way crazier than the missionary they're doing inside.
Yeah, it's just, like, rolling around constantly.
Yeah, but they do actually, like, flip over at one point from like our inside the tent
POV. Yeah, at one point, not several times.
Yeah, I know. But this is the last time they flip over, and then she's on top of him, and then we see just this object come through. It pierces her right through her stomach, and it's like, oh no, blood, blah, gross, she's bleeding from the mouth. And then you know what happens? The thing that pierced her rips her in half! It's insane!
From, like, vertically, not horizontally.
Yeah, so. Like, it just looks... splits straight up, like it's in her torso and then goes up through her skull.
Yeah,
it's insane.
This is one that
it definitely was not in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, this one was I was caught off guard by seeing that because it was so fucking brutal to watch that.
Yeah. And then we go back to the diner because we don't come back to these kids at all ever again. They were cannon fodder. We go back to the diner. Diana feeds the little stray dog named Tango outside. He's cute. It's sweet. We're establishing her as a nice lady that we like. Because that's what you do. You make a character likable so that way when they're in danger, you go, no, not Diana. So we see the coroner has kidnapped Josh because Josh was there like checking on Diana, making sure she was okay. He ties him up naked. He shaves his mustache off. Can Jason not grow a beard? Does he have facial hair envy? Like, is he mad? Like, what part of Jason Voorhees' spirit is like, I'm gonna possess this cop? But I can't deal with this fucking mustache.
The way that he possesses these people is by he has to like French kiss them. So I don't think he wants to kiss people with a mustache.
Okay, you know what though? I like that. I like that. I like that Jason's not homophobic. I like that he's flexible. But you know, we're talking about setting your boundaries with your partner. Clearly, this is not consensual, so this is not the ideal situation. But, you know, Jason knows what he wants.
Yeah.
He's the bad guy. And he gets a good shave, honestly, for how, like, primitively he goes at it, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, honestly. I don't understand the whole point of doing that, because, like, the whole point of Jason is he doesn't... He's just kind of barbaric with everything. Why would he give a shit about shaving somebody?
I love it, though. It adds, like, a nice little piece of, like, who is Jason Voorhees, you know?
Maybe.
Which I think makes it even funnier that we have that cameo from an unmasked Kane Hodder earlier on, and he's got a mustache.
Yeah.
I think that makes it even better. I love it. I wonder if the actor that was playing the cop was just like, I want to shave my mustache. And they're like, listen, we'll incorporate it into the script. It's fine. So we see Diana. She's talking to her daughter, Jessica, on the phone. Jessica's got a baby and a new boyfriend. At first, it feels like maybe the baby's from the new boyfriend, but he's not. All of it is very weird.
That's not what I would have thought. The baby's like... maybe like a couple of months old, and she's like, hey, I got a new boyfriend.
It's, yeah, the whole thing is, it's a little bit like, well, I don't know. I was like, maybe she hasn't talked to her mom in a year. She's like, I got a boyfriend and a baby, but I got a boyfriend.
Yeah, maybe.
He's on TV. So we see her talking, and in the background, Josh pops up because Diana didn't lock her door.
Nope.
But when he walks in, we see Jason is in the reflection for him. So we're like, oh, he's definitely possessed by Jason. We knew he was possessed before, but like, this is them being like, okay, it's a possession movie. It's Jason. That's really him.
This is how she knows that he's possessed by Jason. Yeah. She sees that.
Yeah.
It's more for her.
So she shoots him in what should have been a fatal shot. But he lives. Meanwhile, Steve comes in because Steve has been stalking Jessica for a while.
She invited him over.
Did she?
That's why he had declined on going skinny dipping.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Why did I miss that? What was I doing? I think I was looking up trivia stuff with all of this.
Hmm.
I'm like the world's worst. I'm one of those people that like if I'm not in a movie theater, I am on IMDb the whole time a movie's on because I'm just like, I want to know all the background information. I'm terrible to watch a movie.
All the background information, yeah. Without the movie information.
Yes.
I'm terrible. I know. I admit it. I'm sorry. But anyway, Steven shows him, sees that Diana just shot the sheriff but did not shoot the deputy. And he was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to fix this. Jessica, meanwhile, has called the cops because she, like, hears the shot and her mom yelling and she assumes something's wrong. So, like, he is, like, fighting him, but Josh stabs Diana. We see also on his jacket at this point that it says Cunningham County Police Department, which obviously is a nod to Sean Cunningham because in the past it's been like Crystal Lake County. So this is clearly like a new county or a new imagining of it or whatever.
The New Lines mantra.
The continuity in this series is just meh.
As discussed in the Nightmare on Elm Street episode, they did the Craven. This is Cunningham County. So
So Diana, like with her dying breath, is like, save Jessica. And Steven's like, I've been stalking her. Obviously, I'm gonna make sure that she's okay. It's fine. Cops show up. Josh's body is gone. Diana's dead. They do the reasonable thing. And far be it from me, you all know, if you've been listening to this franchise, you know that I do not give the Crystal Lake Police Department or Cunningham County Police Department or Crystal Lake County Police Department, whatever fucking cops it is, you know I do not give them much credit. But I will give them credit for this because this is suspicious. Obviously, he's a suspect. He's covered in blood. They bring him into the police department. That's the right move.
Yeah.
I agree with it. And they're all like, it's a small town. They know him. They're not like dicks to him about it. They're just like, bro, really? Like, they're just bummed out that he killed Diana. Everybody likes Diana. So Jessica arrives into town with her boyfriend Robert and her baby Stephanie, who we will henceforth refer to as Stephanie because we both immediately clocked that it was meant to be Steven's baby. How? We're not entirely sure. We just instinctively knew that Steven was obsessed with Jessica and that was his baby.
I had more of like a knowledge of or previous watching knowledge of this movie than you, so...
Yeah, I just, like, as soon as, like, I saw the way Steven looked at Jessica, I was like, oh, that's definitely Steven's baby. And then you called her Stephanie. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. It's there. Vicky, she also works at the diner, used to work with Diana. She agrees to watch the baby. So that way Jessica and Robert can, like, be detectives, grieve. I really don't know why she's watching the baby.
He's setting up the whole thing of, you know, doing the whole story on Jason Voorhees and the Voorhees family. So he's like, he's going over to the...
she doesn't know that.
No, but, you know, that's his thing. Yeah. That's why he's not involved.
Yeah. Let's see. So Steven's in a cell. He is in the cell next to Crichton Duke. And he's, like, starting to taunt him about being arrested for the murder of the love of his life's mother and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, do you trust me? Give me your hand. And then he breaks his finger. And Steven's like, why the fuck should I have trusted you? That was a bad move on my part. And then he goes, no, it's okay because I can save Jessica's life. You have to convince her to murder somebody. And he's like,
he's not just randomly breaking their hand or his hand, though. He's like, hey, I've got information on this whole thing, but it costs, you know, like it costs the price. Like, are you willing to pay that price? It's like, I'm willing to pay that price. So he sticks his hand through the cell and then he starts breaking his fingers. It's not like he's just like, hey, bro, you killed the love of your life. Let me see that hand. Like, that's not what's happening here.
It is kind of what happened.
But he's giving him information, though. Like, obviously, the Duke knows shit about this because he called it immediately. He was watching, by the way, in the beginning of the movie, whenever they were doing that whole sting on Jason.
Yeah.
He was watching in the distance. He's like, nope, it's not over yet.
Yeah.
So he knows that Jason is going over to different bodies.
And here's my thing. My thought was that he was going to have Steven use this as, like, an out to get out of the cell and go to the hospital because they're not supposed to just let people, like, you know, have injuries and potentially have infections and blah, 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 blah. At the very least, it costs money to the county to deal with stuff like that. That was my thought. That's not what ends up happening.
No, it wasn't part of the plan. He was just charging him by breaking his hands.
Yeah. But what we find out is that
only by a Voorhees can he be rebirthed, but also only by a Voorhees can he die. And this is where I have a lot of issues with Pamela. Because apparently Jason had a sister. And that sister was Diana. So since Diana's dead, Jessica has to be the one to kill him. Or Stephenie, but, you know, Stephenie's a baby, and that's a lot to ask of a baby.
Yeah.
And he wants Stephen to go get the proof of the lineage at the Voorhees house. And here's my thing. So I'm sitting here and I'm doing all the math of, like, when the initial drowning went down at Camp Crystal Lake and how old Jason was supposed to be versus when that means he had to have been born. And then assuming how old Diana had to have been, and even assuming that she was the youngest she could have been to have had this child, and that Jessica was also very young when she had her child. All of that means that Jason and Diana still had to be fairly close in age, which means that Pamela was basically neglecting Diana throughout her whole revenge against Crystal Lake thing.
Yeah, so they make a note in the beginning whenever they're doing the biopsy, or not biopsy, I don't know, autopsy on Jason, that he is a male in his late 30s or in his 40s. And that kind of clocks around the same age as Jessica. Or not Jessica. Diana. Jessica, Diana.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're pretty much in the same age.
Diana looks fairly young. She's got a fairly young-looking daughter with a baby.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even assuming that they were, like, as like, yeah. Pamela neglected Jessica. And honestly, I don't even feel like this is, like, a last-minute ride. And, like, we need to get a twist, and it just doesn't add up. Like, I wasn't a fan of Pamela Voorhees. I did not agree with her methods of vengeance, and this just kind of adds to my Pam hate. You know? I'm okay with it. I will add it to the canon in my mind. It's fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, Stephen calls for help, says that Duke broke his fingers. This cop, Landis, who really gets the short end of the shit stick in this whole movie, comes, and he's, like, trying to talk to Stephen. It's clear that they're, like, friendly or
something. They have a history. Yeah. Yeah, they're friends.
Yeah. He's like, let him out. And then he, like, grabs him by the neck, grabs his gun, forces him to let him out, locks him into the cell. And Landis is just like, bro.
Yeah, the guy was about to unlock the cell to let him out. And he's just like, all right, I'm going to grab your gun and hold you hostage now. So I'm going to rack up all sorts of charges.
Yeah. Then we cut over to the diner, Joey B's diner. She doesn't want to close, even though one of their own was killed. And she was like, listen, profits are low. I need to, like, keep the restaurant afloat. I need to keep everybody hired. She has her son hired and some other guy that, like, is it her brother? Is it her husband? I don't know.
Husband. They kiss.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Okay. He reminds me of the camp director from Sleepaway Camp 3. And when I started to say, you know who he reminds me of, Travis immediately knew who I was going to say. So, but she doesn't want to do that. She sees Vicky come in. Vicky's got this baby. And she's like, no, a baby can't be here. Then she gets a phone call. And then she goes, go put the baby in a box in the kitchen. And I'm like, that's not good baby watching.
Not good baby etiquette.
But that's what they ended up doing. It's fine. It happens. The baby. I mean, the baby lives through the diner. We don't know if the baby lives through the whole movie. It's never fully explained.
Yeah. It kind of goes missing.
Yeah. It's, yeah. But she gets the call about Steven that he's on the loose and has a gun. So when she gets that call, she doesn't say anything to Vicky, but she's just like, yeah, go put the baby in a produce box back in the kitchen. Steven appears back there and, he's never gotten to meet his baby. This baby is currently unwatched, unsupervised in this produce box on a counter in a diner kitchen. So many bad things happening. And Joey's son, Ward, comes in, sees Steven, and he's like, Ward, please, please, please. I've never touched my child before. This is my child. And I think it's meant to be like this grand reveal that Stephenie is Steven's child, but like, we knew. Like, obviously, that's what was happening. Mm. And Ward just, like, smiles in the creepiest fucking way and bags out of the kitchen.
Yeah.
So much about this scene is so absurd, but I love it anyway. It's fine.
Yeah, it's whatever. It's trying to give some kind of information on, you know, what's happening here, whatever. It's kind of clunky.
Yeah. So Steven then goes to the Voorhees house. It's fucking huge. Pamela must have gotten a massive settlement from the death of Mr. Voorhees. Like, it's a huge house.
Well, we established before, it's not exactly canon, but Mr. Voorhees was a real thing and he's alive.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever.
So.
In my head, like, because it wasn't canon. Like, Mr. Voorhees was established, but he was dead.
Yeah.
Either way, it's a huge fucking house. It's insane. Yeah.
It's a mansion. Yeah. It's straight up huge. Yeah. Yeah.
It's beautiful. And honestly, for as long as it's been abandoned, it's in decent shape inside. And it's got a Necronomicon. So that's a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So this is a movie. I feel like this one has... I don't think New One had Evil Dead. I think it was like... You mentioned before that they had some kind of like ongoing thing. Or maybe it was Nightmare on Elm Street. That they had some kind of ongoing thing.
Yeah, because it was Craven and Raimi.
Yeah, so I guess since New One got... the rights to it, they're like, fuck it, let's just throw Jason in the mix too. So you know, we'll get some Evil Dead action.
I will let these universes be shared. They're all absurd.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, there's never any actual crossover from Evil Dead with this, which, you know, I feel like it would. This one is like maybe one of the more fitting ones because Jason is a zombie at this point. Like, you can kind of make him a Deadeye if you wanted to. Like, there's all kinds of ways to go about it.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But he's in there, and then all of a sudden Robert pops in, so Steven hides in a closet, and he's, like, casing the joint, and he's talking on the phone, and he's talking about how he stole the body from the morgue, and he's like, that's gonna be a big news story tomorrow, so be on the lookout for it. Wink, wink. He's like, I hid it in the closet, and then I went home and fucked her daughter. And this is where you realize that Robert was only dating Jessica to get to the story, and that he's kind of a piece of shit.
Oh, this is where you realize he's a piece of shit?
I mean, I knew he was a piece of shit, but I'm just saying, like, so then what happens is that Josh appears, and he attacks him, and he possesses him, and nobody's sad about it because fuck this guy. But what happens next is that when Robert is unpossessed... He's been shot. He should be dead.
Robert is possessed. Yeah,
when Josh is unpossessed, he should be dead because he's been shot and stabbed several times. And also, I don't know what's happening with his soul. He starts to melt.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, melts onto the floor and, like, his jaw comes out. Like, it's the effects in this scene are fucking amazing.
Yeah, so amazing. Basically what he's melting onto the floor. Yeah. And then his jaw becomes kind of like... joined with the floorboard, yeah, so he tries to pull his head up, and his jaw, his whole lower jaw, like, just kind of rips off and just stays. Yeah, it's really impressive, honestly.
Yeah. This is where we go back to where Jessica's at, and she's crying in the shower, and then this kind of, I've been struggling with the English language for the past week or so. It's tragic, really. It kind of mimics the opening scene with Agent Marcus getting into the shower and the lights go out. Except Jessica's already in the shower. The lights go out. She comes out. Ooh, spooky stuff. Except Steven grabs her, puts her into the car, and he's like, we need to go now. And then Robert breaks the window and tries to attack him. And Steven kills him, except not really because he's possessed. So you can't actually
kill him. Just running him over.
Yeah. And Jessica, like, is, like, you know, freaking out about her or whatever. They drive. We see a sign for Smokey the Bear. Just have to point that out because that's kind of cool. Only you can prevent forest fires. It's important. Jessica ends up kicking Steven out of the car. She takes over. She drives to the police station, as a reasonable person does.
Yeah.
Landis, he has gotten out of the cell. He drives out to where Jessica has said Steven is. And he's like, hey, man, like, why? Why would you do that to me? That's not cool.
But it's also weird that Steven would not have moved. Like, with the way that he's been moving this entire movie and all of this stuff happening, it's super urgent.
He's such a fragile little boy.
Well, yeah, but it's just inconsistent.
He is at least our age, and he is still wearing his high school Letterman jacket.
Yeah, that's true. But my point is, it's just kind of weird. Like, he's just hanging out by the side of the road, not doing anything.
Yeah. And then, like, Landis is like, yeah, Jessica's at the station and she's freaking out. He's like, oh, she's at the station? Yeah, go ahead and cuff me. Take me in. And then when he gets there, I also want to say, like, we see he's still wearing the same clothes because this has all been in the span of a single night. And the dried blood on his pants fantastic fake blood, because that's exactly how dried blood should look on jeans. I appreciate it. Lesser movies would have made it bright red paint on his pants. It's good. I like it. So he gets there. When they get to the station, he's still in his cuffs. Robert busts in, and his neck and his face are really, really fucking gross. He busts in. Steven sees that Robert's there. And then you got so upset about this because Steven hits Landis again and knocks him out.
Well, it's really stupid because, so before they even showed up, Robert, or Jason, taken over as Robert, bursts through the like whole police department and is killing these people one by one, trying to get his way to Jessica. That way he can possess Jessica and become reborn. But she gets away and she's running down the hall, and Steven and Landis show up and notice this. And then instead of, like, you know, having Landis there for help, he just jumps up, knocks him out, steals his gun, and then decides to shoot Jason that way, which is so fucking stupid. Like, why would you not want to have Landis on your side? That's another person that you could have assisting you with the whole thing. The guy is not smart. He's pretty fucking stupid, and I can understand why she left him in the first place.
Side note, Robert looks like Leslie Vernon when Leslie Vernon is outside of his mask.
Yeah.
So
it's got the same, like, eye makeup.
Yeah. Jessica and Steven go to the diner to collect their baby, but Joey is there, and she is very aggressive, and she says, "No one's gonna touch that fucking ray of sunshine." I love Joey. I love her. There's a subreddit, and it's like a dads who didn't want pets, and she is the embodiment of that in this moment where she did not want that baby in the diner in the first place, and now she's like, "Oh no, you are not gonna touch this baby. You guys are unstable. I'm gonna protect this child. It brought light into my life that I haven't had." I love her.
Yeah.
But that's too bad because they all end up fighting over a gun. There's a shot that goes into electrical box. The lights go out because that is the theme of this movie. It should just be called Friday the 13th. The power went out.
Friday the 13th, lights out.
Robert shows up. Vicky tries to shoot him with a shotgun. She hits this random guy who dies. He's just additional cannon fodder. The baby's gone. There's a note saying to show up alone at the Voorhees house. Joey's husband.
It's signature the Duke.
Oh, okay. I missed the signature. I just saw the note. Okay. Joey's husband gets his face into a fryer. I'm sad we didn't get to see the effect of his face afterwards because I always love a good fryer drowning.
You do see it.
I missed it. How Dude. Did I miss so much of this movie? I was watching it so closely. I felt like
no.
Oh my god.
You need to watch these.
What
movies
the hell? Okay. Well, anyway, Joey gets her face punched in. Vicky gets the signature Jason Voorhees head squeeze. You can't go through a movie without that. Jessica drives off, leaving Steven by himself. He grabs a machete off the wall because, of course, there's a machete mounted on the wall. Why wouldn't there be? Duke is at the house with the baby. He says that this dagger is the only way to kill him, and she can be the only one to kill him because she is related to him. And
did you see what happens when she grabs it?
Yes, there's a very terrible, like, Windows Movie Editor light effect.
Well, not only that, it turns into a completely different dagger.
I missed that.
Dude.
I was distracted by the light effect. That was not me not paying attention. That was me, like, ooh, light.
It, like, overlays it. Like, yeah, it turns into a completely different dagger because she's holding it. It's the family dagger, apparently. It's the only thing that can kill Jason, which is, like, straight up fan theory lore that, like, it reminds me of the stuff that we would come up with whenever I was a kid, talking about Michael Myers, how to stop him. Like, the only way to kill him is to, like, stab him with his own knife. Mm. So it kind of felt like that with this right here, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't really want to do it. She's like, "I just want to get my baby and, like, get away from all of this." And he's like, "Well, he's going to try and get to you or your baby so he can be reborn. So really the only way to stop this is to kill him." And she's like, "Fuck." So the cops come in. Jessica's in a conundrum because they, like, are, you know, not gonna let her just stab a guy. So she starts stabbing cops.
That's not great.
Well, to be fair, the cop is like acting very suspiciously. He tries to kill her first.
I agree. I'm going to leave my normal commentary about it.
Basically, it's one of the cops from, it's the cop that had her pulled in originally.
What is happening is that it's been established that we don't know who is possessed. Duke says that when she gets there.
That's what I was going to say.
And yeah. And what ends up happening is that it's Landis that's been possessed.
Yeah.
So. And.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of weird because, you know, they're both talking and you don't know. This is like the first instance of ever seeing anything from Jason talking. Other than him being a kid before any of the shit took place.
Unless you count Pamela. Kill them, Monty. Kill them.
I do not count that.
I count it.
But he doesn't talk in any of the other people that he possesses. But this time he's like suddenly, okay, I need to talk here.
I feel like Landis deserved it.
Maybe, I guess.
He grabs Stephen E. Then he gets beheaded. And the stuff that comes out of his neck makes me want to die. It's gross. It's like a monster from The Thing and it crawls away and I hate it. And then it crawls into the corpse of Diana's vagina and I want to die even more. It's awful. And also awful because now like he's going to be like reborn. Jessica has lost the dagger. It's underneath a dresser. I feel like they could have moved the dresser. Like I feel like that would have been the easier option than her like trying to reach underneath it, or one of the dudes with longer arms could have reached underneath it. You know, I feel like there were other options than the way they went about it. I get it, you panic in the moment, but I don't agree with the way they went about it. She can't reach him. Duke has handcuffs, so he handcuffs Jason Voorhees to try and hold him back a little bit. Obviously, a little handcuff action ain't gonna stop Jason Voorhees. He's a freak. He's into it. He feels it. He kills Creighton Duke. And then Steven ends up tackling him through a window. This is the only instance of body through a window in this movie. So not the same as our typical body through the movie that we've come to know and love in this franchise. But at least there is body through a window. You know what I mean? They're fighting outside. Jessica has somehow managed to grab this dagger. And she sneaks outside. And she jumps up. She grabs onto his back, spider monkey style, stabs him in the chest. He has lightning bolts shoot out of his body. Boom, boom, boom. You think he's dead, but he's not really dead. He's still up wandering around. So Steven punches him in the face some more. Oh, guess what? More lightning bolts. Pew, pew, pew. And then all of these hell demons reach up out of the ground. They grab Jason Voorhees. Then they start to grab Steven too.
Oh, no.
For whatever reason.
She kicks the dagger like all the way into him.
Oh, okay.
And that's what causes the demons to come up.
Okay. Well, they start trying to grab him. And they start grabbing Steven too. And Jessica watches for a really, really long time debating whether or not to save Steven. A really long time. And then she just kind of like, I swear she almost sighs and then she's like, okay, well, I guess I'll save him.
No. He needs a dad.
And then we get the next morning. We get the soft music. They're holding on to each other. They're walking away. We don't see their fucking baby. We don't see their baby. Where is the baby?
Unless it's like something that they're holding in front of them. I have no idea.
I feel like they should have shown it. You know what I mean? Like, did the baby die? Did they abandon it? I don't know. It would have been better off left in the produce box in an unsupervised kitchen. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's it. Except when we see Tango come up, Tango has wandered all the way up. Apparently, Diana is the only one who ever fed him behind the dumpster. He followed the scent of Diana's rotting corpse and was like, can you please give me some chicken scraps? He digs at the dirt. Finds a hockey mask.
Pees on it. Pees fire on it. And suddenly,
yeah,
suddenly Freddy shows up.
Yep. Actually, Freddy really does show up, though. Like, his arm shoots up and grabs the mask. Which is would have been great if the next movie was Freddy versus Jason, but it's not.
It should have been. By the way, the pee fire thing is like a reference to our Nightmare on Elm Street 4 episode. Yes. So
if you haven't listened to that, go listen to it. It's a good episode. It's fun.
It is really weird that that's the end of the movie. But yeah. It is really weird that this one doesn't immediately go into Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
But canonically, it makes sense because Freddy versus Jason is like probably the next one over in the timeline, and Jason X obviously is like thousands of years later.
I'm really excited to talk about Jason X.
Yeah.
I have love in my heart for Jason X. Similar to Takes Manhattan.
So. Jason X is a fun movie.
So, all right. After talking about it, how do you feel about it?
I mean, I haven't budged any. I still really like this movie. I'm going to keep it at an 8. It's, well, I said my piece before. I feel like it's a fun movie. May not be like, you know, the Friday the 13th movie that I would reference if you want to watch a Friday the 13th movie. But if you're looking for something a little bit different and, you know, you kind of still want to keep it within something familiar, like familiar territory, I would recommend it.
I'm going to keep mine at a 9. I think it's a good... It's a good new kind of script in the series. I feel like a possession movie is okay the way they did it. It was interesting enough. I feel like a lot of the problems people have with the telepathy one was just that it didn't feel organically written into the script. This one feels a little bit more organic.
Kind of. And one way that kind of explains it, that it doesn't really outright say it, you have to be familiar with, you know, Evil Dead, but like the Necronomicon being at the house kind of explains how some of the shit is happening in the first place.
So I like it. I feel like it's an enjoyable movie to watch. I enjoy the characters, like, not necessarily like them, but I like watching them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a fun movie. I have a really, really good time with it, and I can't believe more people don't like it.
I know, it's so weird. I get it, because it's definitely not a Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, it's not a typical Friday the 13th movie. I'm going to say that Talia maybe doesn't like this one as much as us. She was asleep through most of it. She did bark at one point when Amazon dropped off. No, it wasn't even when Amazon dropped off a package. She didn't bark at that. She just barked at one point. Just got barky.
Yeah.
She does that sometimes. But she was out of the room for most of it. So I think she's probably like a 4 on this one. I feel like she's in the majority. She's one of those people that's like, they're not by a lake. They're not on a boat. She likes boats. She likes woods.
Yeah.
Like, Ty just didn't like this one as much.
Okay.
All right. We don't do One Change or a Dream sequel. Do you want to do Relate To real quick? Because it's going to be a real fast one before we do the internet review.
Okay.
I relate to Joey, obviously. The Why? Diner owner.
Oh, right. Obviously. Who do I relate to? I don't know, man. There's not a lot of relatable characters in this one to me. Fuck it, man. I'll just chalk it up to Landis, because he's like a normal person put in the circumstances of a Friday the 13th movie. You know, all this crazy shit's happening. I don't relate to anybody else. I don't know. There's not that many relatable characters in this for me.
Okay. All right. User review from IMDb. Again, we are talking about the review, not the reviewer. So if you wrote this, don't be offended. This is not a Friday film. If longtime fans of Friday the 13th saga have anything to say about it, the people behind this film will burn in the same place as its hockey masked star. Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, is completely preposterous, out of place, and an affront to what had been a dependable horror series. Admittedly, director and co-writer Adam Marcus deserves credit for his boldness. He seemed inexplicably convinced that the Wheel of Friday series needed to be drastically reinvented, even though fans had lined up for basically the same plot 8 times prior. But the brainwave of having Jason possess one body after another alters the very fabric of what made these films good. Suddenly, it's like we're watching an Invasion of the Body Snatchers ripoff. Throw in Jason's newfound grunting, a far too heavy plot, and magical dagger, parenthetical exclamation point, and you have something completely unworthy of the Friday moniker.
Yeah, I agree that, I mean, like I've said it this entire episode, this doesn't feel like a Friday the 13th movie. So if you're going to judge it purely based off of, like, you know, is this Jason Voorhees killing people? You know, I agree with this person. It's not going to be like that. I mean, the guy had to work around issues. He wrote it under the assumption that he wouldn't be able to use the hockey mask. So he's jumping all over to all these other people. But, you know, if you're watching a Friday the 13th movie and that's what it's billed as, that's not where you're getting here. I also do think that the magical dagger thing is pretty fucking stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's one thing to be like, Jessica has to be the one to kill him, but it's another to be like, she has to be the one to kill him, and she has to use this magic pointy stick.
Yeah, it's not really necessary. Just, yeah, have her be the one to kill him. That's pretty much all you need. Like, you don't need to, like, give us this. Like I said before, it feels kind of like stupid, like, fan theory shit that you would, like, read online from, like, teenagers. So
I disagree with some of this because I think saying that, like, the same plot happened 8 times prior, we've talked about this. They do mix it up some, and every time it's mixed up, fans complain about it. Think about part 5. Think about part 8. People do not like the change of people going into the... Oh, and the telepathy one. Which one is that? Part 7?
Yeah.
Yeah. People do not typically like change. They just keep showing up anyway. You know what I mean? Also, they talk about him jumping between body. Like, he's been killed so many times and resurrected so many times in so many weird mystical ways. I don't feel like this body jumping thing is that far out of the realm of plausibility. I don't agree that this seems unreliable. I like that they took a chance, and I think it's a well-done movie. I enjoy it a lot. I think it had enjoyable side characters, people that you really feel for, even if they only have a small amount of screen time. It's not, aside from the campers that didn't get a chance to have their threesome, you really get a sense to know even, like, the minor characters, you know? So I enjoyed it a lot. All right. Is that it?
Yeah, because we're not doing Dream Sequel and all that other stuff. So. All right.
Well, this Sunday, if you're listening to this when it comes out, at some point in the Sunday, our bonus episodes, we don't upload at the same time as our normal episodes. It'll happen at some point on Sunday. We will have Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, The Dream Child. Don't know how that's going to go. I don't know the last time I watched that one, so I don't remember that one either. And then next week, we will have Tragedy Girls, which I love and Travis doesn't. So I'm very excited to talk about it. I haven't had a chance to watch it since the first time we watched it over a year ago. Over 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So
it's been a bit. It's
been a while. I'm very excited for it. And that'll conclude September. And then we're trying to think of fun things to do for October. So stay tuned for that. Anything else?
Social media.
It's all going to be in the show notes, but let me try and run through it again because Travis yells at me when I don't do it every single episode. Twitter, Least Fave Pod. Instagram, Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast. Our Facebook is just our name. Our website is whatsyourleastfavoritescarymovie.com. You can email us at whatsyourleastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com.
No, it's just leastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com.
leastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com. This is why I don't run through it every
we
single time.
We need to have this written out on our
It's written whiteboard. Out on our show notes.
On our whiteboard. That way we can read it. If you don't want to read these off anymore, I will take over at the end of the episodes.
I want to type this up and frame it and put it on a big print on the opposite wall so we can look at it every time.
Okay.
Email us, DM us, whatever. If you give us a hot take, if you give us a suggestion, if you review us on Apple Podcasts or other networks, like, we will read that shit. So do it.
Yeah.
The Democratic vote is the right thing to do, Philadelphia. So do.
Yeah. If you have opinions about any of the movies that you see that we're covering, you know, let us know. If you know anybody that has strong feelings about anything, let them know, that way they can let us know.
Yeah. We release through Anchor. There are a ton of platforms that we're through, but I know Anchor will let you send like a voice message to. So if you have a really strong opinion about it and you want to send us a voice message and we think it's interesting about one of our upcoming episodes, because you all know all of the movies we're doing a month in advance, we might play that.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, actually. Yeah. You don't even have to do it through Anchor. Just email it to us or send it through one of our social medias.
Yeah, if you want to just, like, record, like, voice through your phone and send it to us through one of our many venues, we'll probably play it.
Easy peasy.
Yeah. You guys hear me talk about my sister all the time, so if you want to be like my sister, which you should because she's a great person, like, both my sisters are, but, like, Morgan listens to the podcast and Carolyn follows all the social media. They're both great. They both do good things for us, and I appreciate them both. They're both wonderful people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they get shouted out a lot.
If you want to be shouted out, do something shout-worthy.
We'll shout at you.
Yeah. Shout, shout, let it all out. Do you have anything else to say?
That's all.
All right. Thanks for being here, and we will see you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.